Hello, I'm Bill Moore, and you're listening to EV World. AC Propulsion of San Dimas, California, has been struggling for more than a decade to keep the dream of fun, fast electric vehicles alive. Its technology was the basis of the Impact, the car that eventually became the General Motors EV1. Its T0 sports car demonstrated that EVs can outrun even the best performance cars. And when the company made it its drive to lithium-ion batteries, they suddenly had a car with 300 miles range. Well, Tom Gage is AC Propulsion's president and just returned from China, where a pair of his drive systems powered two entrants in the Challenge Bibendum, sponsored by Michelin in Shanghai. Just before this, Venturi in Monte Carlo debuted the Fetish, an electric car that also has his drive in it at the Paris Auto Show. So he's here to tell us about his recent journey to China and developments at ACP. Welcome to EV World, Tom.
Thank you, Bill. It's good to be here.
Well, it's great to finally have you. I mean, I think I had Alex a couple of times on, but I think it's my first time having you on, actually.
Well, it's glad to be here.
Yeah, one of these times we're going to have to get Alan on, too, right?
Good luck.
Okay, let's begin by talking about Shanghai and the Michelin Bibendum. This was obviously not your first time to the Bibendum because you were up in Sonoma last year and actually put on quite a show, and I think was sort of the centerpiece of that particular event. At least you've got a lot of good publicity out of it. Tell us about Shanghai. What was it like this year?
Okay, well, this is actually the third Bibendum I had attended. I went to the one in Los Angeles, I think it was 2001, and then we entered in 2003 up in Sonoma near San Francisco with the T0 and did quite well up there. And then this year we had two customer cars in the event, and I just want to give credit to Michelin, a lot of credit, because they put this event on, and it's really a great thing for them to do because it spotlights environmental technologies and it gives the car companies and small companies like us a chance to get together. And all 3 years the event has really been a lot of fun.
Yeah, well, you know, like last year I think we basically just had a handful of battery electrics there. Pretty much the show was dominated by hybrids and diesels and that kind of technology. And from what I was reading out of the press releases from Shanghai, this thing was really pretty well evenly split between conventional technology and electric drive technology.
Yeah, there were a lot of different cars there. The actual competitive event, which at least for passenger cars, which is what we were participating in, didn't have as many EVs as the program listed. A lot of the EVs there were not participating in the competitive event.
Just there to be on display then.
Right.
Yeah.
Those that were there were good, and a lot of electric bus activity. I got a little chance to look at that, and also a lot of electric scooters and bikes, all kinds of different vehicles.
Well, what surprised me, I think there were 8 electric buses there?
Yes.
Yeah, because I know they had photographs of 2 of them, but there were, I think, a total of 8. And from what I know, there are actually some other projects that are also still, that weren't even at the Bibendum this year that are in development.
Well, there's a big push for electric buses, and I should say these are full-size buses. They're very nice pieces of equipment.
Yes.
And there's a big push to have a lot of electric buses available in time for the Beijing Olympics in 2008.
Well, that certainly will be a real plus. Tell me about what's the air quality there like?
It wasn't too good. It was kind of reminded me of some of the time I spent in Mexico and other areas. Certainly not as clean as it is in Los Angeles most days now. We still get the occasional bad day, but it started sort of getting gray and a little bit smelly first thing in the morning. It was like that all day.
Yeah.
So you have a lot of room for improvement.
Well, that's, I think, probably one reason why they scheduled it to be in Shanghai, because of that situation there. Let's talk about the two vehicles that were in the Bibendum this year. One was the Volvo car, and the other one was a vehicle by the ever unique fashion house of Courage. Tell us about those two vehicles.
Well, Madame Courage runs a couture house in Paris. She's a designer of clothing, and been very successful. And so really what her car, her new car is, the Courage EXE, is a designer concept wrapped around a T-Zero power system. So she bought pretty much the T-Zero systems, drive system, battery management system, lock, stock, and barrel, and built a car around it.
Okay.
And I'm not even going to try to describe it, but there are pictures of it out there.
Yes. Yeah, we have one of the pictures of it on the website. So
good. But it's remarkably civilized considering what it has in the way of body. You're sitting pretty much out in the open, although there's a clear Lexan canopy over the entire car.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, Tom, I'm actually looking. Did you know she set out some of these nice little pamphlets?
Yes.
You know, and so I'm actually holding one of the pamphlets. She was very good to remember me from last year, and I've got the slide photos and the pamphlet here in my hand. So
good.
Yeah. So she actually took the T-Zero and lock, stock, and barrel, obviously not the body, but all the drivetrain and everything.
Yeah, not the body, not the frame. That all was built by the team Courage in Paris, and it's, you know, it's not a big operation. It's kind of a labor of love for some of the people
sure.
she works with, and they did a really great job of grafting all these components together, and the car handled very well, and I think it shows up in the pictures, but the car had red tires.
Yes, I saw that, yes.
And she had a stack of blues and a stack of greens in the garage, but they never got put on the car.
Now, has she ever talked to you, and I gather from when I talked to her in 2003, she didn't speak much English. Has she ever sort of, or they explained to you why a fashion designer would be interested in building an electric car, and this is their second one, obviously.
Yes. You're right. She doesn't speak much English. She and Alan, who does speak French, have had many a conversation.
Oh, okay.
And I think it's really just, a kind of a fundamental belief she has that, you know, these cars are the way to go, that they do what you want them to do, and they're clean, and they're efficient, and there's really no reason more people should be driving them. And so it's, after many years of success in the fashion business, it's kind of like a second career for her to
sure.
see what she can do to make it happen.
Now, obviously this is not, you know, I guess it's the car is designed the way it is simply more to make a statement rather than to be a functional vehicle.
Yes, that's right. I mean, I wouldn't want to be caught out in the rain in this thing. but, you know, for the sparseness of its body, the framework of the body does create a very clear outline, and it's an outline I think that is very attractive from many different angles.
Yeah, in fact, I'm looking at. Go ahead.
Yeah, the design aspect is not missing just because the body is not is sort of a see-through type of thing.
Right. Now, did she go with lead acid in that, or did she opt for the more advanced batteries?
No, she has the T-Zero lithium-ion battery.
Oh, okay, so she put those in it as well. Then.
Right.
So what kind of performance is she getting with that car?
I believe they measured the 0 to 60 in about 6.5 or 6.3 seconds.
That's not bad.
And that was leaving several big red stripes on the pavement.
Are those Michelin tires, by the way?
Yes, they are Michelin.
Oh, okay. So she got Michelin to make up, cook up a set of green, red,
she
and blue for?
She actually paid, I'm not sure what the costs were, but she paid for the whatever special equipment or tooling was required
for
development, because she wanted to do it.
Yeah, that's amazing.
The way she operates. If she wants something, she about gets it.
Yeah, that's just amazing. And I'm pleased to have had the opportunity to meet her. She's an interesting person, so...
Well, it was great working with her whole crew there. They're all, you know, they all actually have roles in her company, and this is something they also do.
Yeah.
And it was just a great group of people, a great team to work with.
Now, was this come about because of the interaction that she had or with you at the Bibendum last year in Sonoma?
Yes, precisely. She saw what the T-Zero could do, and... as you may know, she has another car. She's entered in two previous Bibendums called the La Bouille, which is the Bubble.
Right.
And it's a little round car, extremely short wheelbase. It's underpowered by conventional cars, but it's actually quite a nicely engineered car.
Uh-huh.
And it was very fun and very attention-getting, but she saw what the T-Zero could do and wanted to have something more along those lines.
Yeah.
So she talked with Alan a bit last year at the Bibendum, and I guess by January or February we had a purchase order in hand for
Excellent.
A drive system and a battery system, the whole bit.
Okay. All right, the Volvo C3CC. How did that come about?
Well, Volvo has actually been a customer of ours for quite some time. They're
okay.
a monitoring and concept center here in California, in Camarillo. Looks at a lot of different concepts, and when we first got going, we worked with them on some earlier electric vehicle projects. And the people there are just, you know, they're interested in EVs and hybrids and all kinds of different things. This concept came totally from them. We weren't expecting it, and I'm not quite sure where it came from. But I can quote you from their press material about the 3CC. What they say is, I quote, "It's a functional demonstrator from which clean, safe, and efficient vehicles could be derived in the future." So they're looking at cars really in the theme of the Michelin Challenge Bibendum, which is automobility as a concept, and how do you make it sustainable into the future where resources are more constrained.
Right.
Now, I didn't drive the 3CC except in its very early form when it didn't have a body or anything on it. But it is very well engineered and performed well in all the tests. And originally it was described to us as nothing more than a show car. So we were a bit surprised when they announced they were going to the Challenge Bibendum.
Yeah. Now, is this a three-passenger? I gather two in the front and one in the back?
That's right. It's got a narrow back seat, which actually has two belts, so you could put two kids back there
okay.
or one adult sitting in the middle. But it's really the brainchild of this Volvo Monitoring and Concept Center in Camarillo. And I'd just like to point out, it was 100% built here in California, so it's
okay.
a product of the great state of California.
Excellent. Now, did they take and do the same thing as Madame Courage and buy the whole drive system from you, batteries and all, or did they just take parts of it?
They wanted to, they have very specific packaging requirements, so we designed a battery along with them that fit into their package. It's a smaller than the T0 battery, but as the results of the Bibendum show, quite adequate for what they were trying to do.
And these were lithium as well, Dan?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. So how did these two cars perform then? I mean, what was the final?
Well, I may be the only one who does this, but I take the letter grades that they give to every car in the 10 competitive events and calculate a GPA based on giving an A value of 4 points.
Okay.
And so the GPAs this year came out that the Courage EXE had the second highest overall GPA.
No kidding.
And the Volvo 3CC had the third highest, so we came in second and third.
Now, who got the first one then? Was it?
Well, it was a factory Toyota Prius that was extremely well developed. It had a race car paint job. I don't know what all they had done to it.
Right.
It was a very professional effort all the way.
Yeah.
And they just ran strong and came away with the highest GPA.
Wow. And so Courage was the second one then?
Yes.
Wow, that's amazing.
So, yeah, I mean, you don't know the half of it. Neither of those cars was running when September came around. And there was a lot of late-night, midnight oil burned.
Now, were you over in Paris doing this, helping them with it, or what?
Yeah, we sent three of our people to Paris to get the car running, and we were in a lot of down-to-the-wire work with Volvo and their contractors as well. We didn't actually build their car, but
right.
We, you know, a lot of final tuning and development to get the thing running.
Amazing. Okay. All right. Now, the third car actually debuted before these two did. That's the Venturi Fetish. And they're out of Monte Carlo, I believe.
That's right.
Yeah. Tell us about that one. That is, I mean, if we're talking about this, these others are concept cars. This is actually a car that is destined for limited production. Is that right?
I believe so.
If you've got the $800,000 for it.
Yeah, there may be a little negotiation there on the price, but
yeah.
Venturi is a real car company. It's small, but it's real, and it has a 20-year history of producing low-volume GT cars. And we'd actually been talking to them for quite a while, maybe 2 years or so. They're sort of mulling this idea around, and what I think they see is that electric drive besides its obvious benefits for the environment, is a way for them to differentiate themselves. Because big automakers are now getting better at creating and selling niche products. The new Ford GT is an example of that.
Sure.
A big company can make a car in very low volume.
And
that used to be where these small companies would find their market.
Yeah.
So what Venturi liked was that we had a drive system that would give them the good performance that they need for their customers. And so with the fetish, I think Venturi stakes out a new territory, and no major auto company is going to be able to touch that niche for years, if ever.
Okay, describe that system for us then.
Well, it's our basic T0 drive system. We've talked with them about various tweaks and modifications for performance if and when they go into production, and that's still up in the air. They want to go for maximum performance. And so we developed a battery for them that's actually even bigger than the T0 battery, but still based on laptop cells. And it's a unique packaging approach where the batteries are packaged in a T down the middle of the car.
Oh, somewhat like the old EV1 then.
Very much like the old EV1. And they built a carbon fiber chassis and the body. The whole car is basically their own development. And we worked very closely with them on packaging the battery and the drive system.
Now, is this front-wheel drive or rear-wheel?
It's rear-wheel drive.
Okay.
Two-seat sports car, rear-wheel drive.
Okay. And pretty much luxury all the way around then, I would imagine.
Yes. Uh-huh. Very luxurious. They're based in Monaco, and the owner of Venturi is Gildo Pastor, and he's very well connected over there, and pals around with the prince, I guess.
Okay. So we might expect to see this car then at the EVS 21, right?
Well, I would think so. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's been so busy with this car that we haven't really made plans for that show, but I think that'll be next on the agenda.
Have they told you whether or not, because of the Paris Auto Show. If they've actually gotten any kind of preliminary orders at this point, or they?
Well, I understand that the show went very well for them, both in terms of press and buyer interest, but I really have to defer to them regarding any of their future plans.
Sure. So they haven't put an order in for 100 drives from you yet, then?
Not yet. Nope.
You keep hoping for that, I'm sure. What would their maximum production, what were they talking about, do you recall?
Very low. I think, just to give you some perspective, I think Venturi over its 20-year history has built less than 1,000 cars.
Yeah.
So, they cater to a very small niche.
Yeah. Okay. Let's come back to China for a moment. What were your impressions of the Chinese technology that you did see there?
Well, an awful lot of people are trying a lot of different things. We talked to some of the small-time EV guys there as opposed to major car companies. And they're doing some very interesting stuff. Some of them have pretty decent hardware. And one advantage they have is that many Chinese battery companies are competing to improve lithium-ion batteries and other kinds of batteries to make them work in cars. So they're kind of working together. Right now the battery companies are the ones with the money, but they see a real potential market there, so they're actively working in the EV arena to develop EV batteries.
That's okay.
Really big help.
How serious do you think all this is then? I've seen comments on the report that I did, people asking, when are we going to see these cars, in the U.S.? And of course, I think we all have to understand that these are still development prototypes and things, but do you think that this is a serious thing for them?
Well, I do think it's serious, and again, the Chinese market is very new and young, and right now it's dominated by these JVs that China has with most of the large Western and Japanese auto companies. But there are also quite a number of small and very aggressive all-Chinese automakers, as well as these battery makers and other big industries in China. And I think between them and the government control of industries over there, it's very hard to predict what direction things will go. But one, one big difference is that the major auto companies do not seem to be really totally in control over there. So there's a lot of scope for the market to move in directions that we haven't seen in other major markets around the world.
Now, by not in control, you're referring to the fact that don't influence the government as much as our car companies here might?
Not to say that that Western car companies tell the governments what to do, but they are so well established and they understand and control the market so well that the government's really powerless to direct the auto industry very strongly. In China, it seemed to me that with the market growing so fast and market potential so huge, and the government still wields a lot of control in its policy making about which direction to go, and the Western Japanese automakers are prohibited from owning more than 50% of any of these JVs, so they kind of have to tread lightly. They can't just say, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. They really have to abide by the direction of the Chinese government and the existing Chinese automakers.
And they've laid down, from what I've been reading, they've laid down some fairly stringent new guidelines in terms of what they want in the way of emissions and efficiency and things like that. So that's going to...
I think they do. I mean, they can see that their market is poised to grow incredibly fast, and right now is the time they need to set the direction before it's too late.
Well, you know, the other thing, too, is that not only is there a huge market in Asia, but you can just simply go across the Himalayan range into the subcontinent of India, and there's another huge market. I mean, that was growing, almost as fast as the Chinese market.
Right. I mean, all those people, they don't walk and ride bikes and stuff because they want to. It's because it's all they've had so far.
Right.
And, the thought of them all starting to drive.
And looking at the numbers of electric vehicles that were there, Tom, did you get the sense that this might sort of be a watershed event for electrics, or is this just another sort of brief blossoming of a short-lived innovation that, you know, sooner or later the car companies and these little developers will come to their senses and go back to gasoline?
I guess I didn't really see it as either one. You know, I don't think it was a watershed because, again, there were really no earth-shattering developments. In terms of EVs, no major announcements of production or anything like that. But I don't think it was an aberration. I think it's really just another step forward in the evolution of people thinking about cars. And I think Volvo understood this. If I can quote again from their PR book, which seemed to be very well thought out.
Yeah, and if you could just speak up a little bit more for me.
Sure. Sorry.
Okay. Thank you.
What Volvo wrote was that the 3cc moves us toward a totally new mobility perspective of not using more car than you need. The global market is changing from a one-car-fits-all notion to using different cars for different needs. And that's really where something like an EV fits in.
It's
extremely well-suited for local driving and urban driving, but that doesn't mean you have to make it or compromise it in terms of cost or other factors so that it can drive across country or 300 miles.
Yeah, so it almost sounds like the message is beginning to get through a little bit.
Oh, I think so.
At least in Camarillo.
Yeah, I give them a lot of credit.
Yeah, okay. The numbers, given those numbers of electric vehicles that were in the Bibendum, whether they were just simply registered or whether they actually competed, what's your impression of the Chinese attitude towards battery electric technology? How did you think the mainstream manufacturers that participated viewed this? Did you get any kind of a read from them?
Yeah, I got two kind of separate reads there. I think one thing I noticed as we drove back and forth from the hotel to the track is that the roads in Shanghai, there are a large number of electric bikes and scooters, and most of them have nice little hub motors, which are still kind of unusual over here. These were everyday transportation appliances. They weren't cool little toys or status symbols or anything.
Right.
They were literally how people get around. And so it stands to reason that people who are used to driving electric scooters and charging them at home will not have either misperceptions or illusions about electric transportation.
Right.
What it can and cannot do. And they will understand that range and range and cost trade-offs to some degree, and I think they'll consider buying EVs if and when they become available. So that should help the development of the EV market in China as compared to Western markets that really don't have much experience with electric transportation.
Do you know of any electric vehicles that are actually for sale over there at this point? That I could go to some dealership someplace and and buy one? Or I mean, and in terms of an electric car.
Yeah, no, I don't know of any. There was this one outfit that was in the program, but I can't remember the name of it. They were supposed to have a lot of cars there, but I never did see them. They may have been over in one of the exhibit areas.
Okay.
But the cars that were there, for the most part, were what we would consider either neighborhood or city-type vehicles.
Okay.
In many cases, there were a couple of cars that were more along the lines of full-performance cars.
Right. And the other point that you made, you talked about seeing these electric vehicles on the road. What else? There was another one you were going to mention.
Well, yeah, how do manufacturers react? I get the impression that the car companies and their JVs are building mostly relatively large cars. I mean, by what we consider mid-size cars.
Yeah, Jeeps and Buicks.
Buick Regals, Honda Accords, Volkswagen Passats are all big over there.
Right.
And, that's for a number of reasons. One, the only people who can afford cars in China now can really afford them, and they can afford a bigger car. So the automakers are starting sort of at the top end of the market with cars they have already tooled up and in production. They're just plunking down factories in China and building the cars there. But I think they may be missing what will become the heart of the market, what I hope will become the heart of the market, which is much smaller cars, which is really what China needs.
Yeah.
For the market to become a mass market. And so I'm not sure whether the car companies are missing this or they're just pursuing their near-term interests at this point while the market is still very young.
What was the biggest surprise for you, Tom, going to Shanghai?
Well, I've never been to China before, so there were a lot of surprises. But, I have to admit that I kind of expected that we would, if the car ran well, that we would take first place again as we did last year.
Uh-huh.
So I was a little surprised and a little disappointed that we took second, although I'm still very proud and pleased with that. And so I was surprised that a gasoline car, the Toyota Prius, was able to do as well as it did. But I give a lot of credit to Toyota for their nearly perfect run. They were clearly very serious about it and did a good job. So, I think even that's a little bit surprising to me because last year I kind of got the impression that the car companies were there for the PR.
Right.
And that the competition was sort of a second.
Right.
Secondary thing.
Yeah.
And I was also surprised that neither Toyota nor Honda had a fuel cell car at the event. I don't really know what to read into that. But for all of the press, PR, and hype they get over here, out here in California, for them not to have any fuel cell cars there was a surprise to me.
That's interesting, yeah. Because you actually had Michelin fielding a fuel cell vehicle.
You had Michelin, Hyundai, Nissan, GM, Ford, and Daimler all had their fuel cell cars there.
Right.
So, I don't know. Can only speculate.
Hmm. Interesting. Any disappointments? Apart from, of course, the fact that, you would have liked the car to come in first.
No, it was just a fantastic event. I don't think I mentioned it, but this racetrack where they held it was just awe-inspiring. And the fact that I got to drive the EXE around the track a couple of times would have overcome any disappointment anyway.
Yeah.
It was just a great trip.
Great. Excellent. Okay. Final question for you. Where does AC Propulsion go from here?
Well, we always have been an R&D house, and that's really what we do best. And so we want to continue to work with Courage and Venturi and possibly even Volvo as their EV programs go forward. And we hope end up putting something into production. To that end, we have signed a license agreement with actually a fourth company, about which I can't really talk right now.
Okay.
And we're looking to agree to terms of additional license agreements, and possibly we even have some feelers out in China.
And I was going to ask you if you'd actually picked up any interest on the Chinese part then.
I had one meeting. We were pretty busy, but I did have one meeting outside of the bibendum, and I'm hoping that will lead to another trip back to China for me.
Okay.
I've been there once, and I'd love to go back.
So you've got a fourth company. When do you expect we'll hear about it then?
I'll leave it up to them.
They
want to fly under the radar for the time.
Okay. Now, is this, there have been talk about you guys doing some kind of conversions of Toyota Scions.
Yeah, is that
a separate thing then?
A separate thing.
Okay.
And right now the Scion project is going forward, but it's self-funded, so we have to give priority to paying customers.
Sure. Okay.
What we've learned in this past year, we're building these systems for Courage, Venturi, and Volvo. Those lessons we are applying to the Scion project, and I think we're ready. I think the timing is right now to close on the funding we need and make the Scion a go program.
Okay. Excellent. So you'll keep us posted when as these things continue to happen, right?
That's right. Sure.
Okay.
Will.
Excellent. Hey, we've had with us today Tom Gage, who is the president of AC Propulsion in San Dimas, California, developers of electric drive technology that's beginning to find its way into its first production car and into some very interesting concept cars. Thank you, Tom.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.